Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Bhuttaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassāmi. I thought I'd say a little bit about the difference between scientific knowledge or way of knowing and spiritual knowledge and way of knowing. So in science then there's always this difference between subjective knowledge and objective knowledge. Knowledge that we obtain through the senses as a human being, and the knowledge, objective knowledge of science, see something that's beyond the individual view, that is has a standing, that's an independent standing, it's a truth that goes beyond an individual's view. So in science then, obviously the second is considered as the higher, it's the hard bridge to make. There tend to be a subjective element to our human inquiry through science, which is hard to eradicate. So when you're looking through a telescope at the stars, mapping the movements of the stars, then there's still a human eye looking through the telescope. It's human error. Creep in, subjectivity creep into the science. And they never really overcome this flaw or cross this bridge to something that is truly, completely objective. There's always the element of the way that a human being would interpret or see these facts. If they are facts, then bringing them home to ourselves, and the significance of these things, then there tends to be biases one way or another. So what is an objective view of of the mind? How do you get an objective view of the mind? Sure, this is a very difficult thing. This is the most subjective thing of all, is the mind. How do you get an objective view of the mind? Yeah, the Buddha would say this is possible. In fact, more possible for us as human beings to get an objective view of the mind than an objective view of the stars or mathematics or anything else. And we can know more clearly, more directly, our own states of mind than we can other things to us we know about. We know about this, we know about that. But the thing that we know most directly is our own mind. And we can be very clear about that. If we see clearly a state of mind, and then we label that clearly, then there's a certain brightening that happens in the mind. And we see that brightening is a kind of, oh yes, there we are, that's right. We can begin to trust that we can see clearly one mind state from another. It's this kind of intuition, not a mysterious kind of intuition, but a very clear one. See very clearly the difference between a wholesome mind state and an unwholesome mind state. They're different animals. As we go on in the practice, we see this more and more clearly, how these two things operate in completely different way to each other. our wholesome mind states will tend to be very open and bright and clear in character. Unwholesome mind states tend to be cramped and dark and contracting, and you see that the brightness or darkness of our own hearts can become very apparent to us. So we're no longer entering into a moralistic world, we just see clearly for ourselves the results of our own thoughts or actions. Whether our mind becomes brighter or darker, or more still or peaceful or more agitated. Wholesome mind states lead to a mind that is open, still, peaceful, calm, bright. Unwholesome mind states lead to suffering, agitation, and unclear, never clear. You never really find them elusive, dark, elusive, spooky. So often the vision, the idea of the world of magic is one of spooky, dark, mysterious, dangerous, and this is what unwholesome mind states are like: spooky, dark, mysterious, hard to find, hard to reveal. They tend to be revealed by the wholesome mind states, revealed by the open, bright, wholesome mind states, that are outshone by them. So you also see how the forces of good overcome the forces of evil in the mind. How the light shining in the darkness, like light shining in the darkness, and darkness is just naturally dispelled. The brightness of a wholesome mind state dispels the darkness of an unwholesome one. It's gone, not suppressed, or it's down there in some. This is a kind of trick of the mind, the sense of all these dark forces hidden away, and the unconscious, the deep, dark, spooky, powerful unconscious. All the dark states of mind, they're like this. They are elusive and throw up smoke screens at us. This kind of thing. Do you notice how, as we go on as practitioners, we begin to talk in a more impersonal way about these things? They're seen as kind of dark forces. But it's not really to put these things really inside of us or outside of us, but to talk in a more objective way, be quite objective about states of mind. How Mara, forces of Mara, the tempter, come to and lead us astray one way or another. How this manifests is kind of dark, smoky, the states of mind that trick us, cover things over, prevent us seeing the truth. The bright mind is the opposite, dispelling the darkness, open, seeing something clearly for the way it is. And particularly in relation to the body. You can see in the psychological terms, you could say that the kilesas, or the dark side of the mind, unwholesome side of the mind, can look very benevolent, like a kind of defence mechanism, they would be called. We have these defence mechanisms that prevent us from seeing our own mortality, psychologists would say. This can seem very benevolent. If this was such bad news, the impermanence of the body was such bad news, then you think, this is the mind being very benevolent to us, hiding this terrible fact from us. And yet the reality is not like that. The wholesome mind sees the impermanence of the body, they also see that the mind is not that. That the body is not self, is seen at the same time. The unwholesome forces of the mind, maybe they're trying, they're trying to be benevolent and hide something from us that they think that we can't see, shouldn't see, something that would destroy us. And yet if we see the realities of the body, the impermanence of the body, it doesn't destroy us, it liberates us. The opposite, really. If we begin to understand this kind of thing, then we can see these states of mind as tricksters, defending us from something that we can't face up to. They're tricking us into seeing things in a way that they're not. Tricky is to see that, you know, not to see the impermanence of the body, and not to be able to see our own mortality. This seeing can be the most beautiful thing. Often you meet people who've had a terminal diagnosis, then either it destroys them or it makes their life. It wakes them up. They become wakes them up to Dhamma. Even they live in a much more full way, can see. If they see clearly, then they're not afraid of death. And so there's this way in which the mind can see the mind in a very clear way. And if they're not seeing in a clear way, then we say, oh, this is the influence of the defilements of the mind. And there is this element, this tricky element, how to deceive, even not to judge that too harshly. Maybe there is a benevolent underlying agenda there, wanting to fool us into thinking that we're going to live forever and everything's all right, and not to worry. In a way, that's true, actually, but not in the way that the body is going to last forever. Maybe this is a kind of distorted wisdom, really. It's trying to tell us, oh yes, you don't worry, you're going to live forever. Maybe that's, in one way you could say that's true. It doesn't mean that the body's going to last forever. It's not true. Then the body and the things associated with the body are impermanent, necessarily impermanent. Yeah, the Buddhist view, and this isn't such bad news either. The mind can survive from one body to the next, is the way that we would understand it. And so the mortality of the body is not such a heavy thing anyway. We can find another body. And this can be all difficult to believe in, but it is possible to see these things for ourselves in one way or another. To be perfectly clearly for the mind to see the mind, the movements and the energies of the mind more clearly than we can see the outside world even. Well, there's this difficulty, this difficult bridge that we have to make between subjective and objective. So I offer that for your reflection.